The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian sitting areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when their travels bring them to Washington. For more information, visit www.tabardinn.com.
Hello, Greenhorns. Welcome to Greenhorns Radio. This is yet another episode of a program devoted to the needs, wants, desires, vision, and fortitude of young farmers all around the country. I'm your host, Severin, located here in the Hudson Valley, in the middle of a very busy spring that was cold and wet and cold and wet, and then went crazy hot and is now kind of settling out. All the leaves are like lettuces, the oak leaves and the maple leaves, and all the birds are singing, and it's just quite a scene. But you're down there in Florida. This is Noah. How's it going?
Yes. Oh, going great. How are you, Severin? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. I've been hearing about your project from people, and I've been hearing about the horrible, crazy weather you had down there and the freeze that knocked back a bunch of citrus. Will you just give us a little climate check-in?
Sure. Yeah, right now it's actually hot as you can imagine. It's been near 100 degrees for the past most of the week, and so that actually seems some vague, distant memory of it actually being cold here. But there was some damaging cold. I mean, for us, we're small enough that we actually have frost cloth to cover our fields with, and so our farm wasn't as affected as some, but certainly the more kind of commercial growers were having a lot to deal with.
So you survived okay, but there was a lot of crop damage. I know that.
Yeah, we did fine. We kind of anticipated that. We had a similar situation the year before. It just came really early this year. The year before it came, you know, in late December, early January, and that's more typical. And this year it was like December, and the frost came really heavy. And so I think that was kind of the shock of it, was more of the timing than the actual temperatures.
So there you are on your swallowtail farm, and you're ready, and you have your remain in place. What's going on that farm? What does it look like? Give us a picture.
Well, I'm actually leaving it right now, and it's different than a lot of Florida in that there's hills here. We're kind of along the ridge of central Florida, and it's a really beautiful area north of Alachua in Alachua County. There's like these rolling hills and lots of pasture around. So our soils are actually a little different too, a little more fertile up here. And there's a creek that runs through the farm, and it's about 30 acres of the land in total, and then we cultivate about 3 right now. And we're just about 2 years old now. We started 2 Junes ago, and we began with a CSA. That was kind of the original vision, was that would be the heart of what we're doing. And we started with about 35 members. And at this point, well, this past Wednesday, we brought about close to 100 bags of produce to the market. And those are all CSA shares. Right now it's a bountiful time of year in a way. It's getting toward the hotter times where some things are falling off, but, you know, we don't have lettuces now, but up until a couple weeks ago, it's kind of the crossing of seasons here. So we have sweet corn and potatoes and tomatoes, and some people have eggplant and peppers and basil. We also have greens still, and beans, and some people have peas still, squash and zucchini and cucumbers. Mostly getting on summertime now.
Getting on summertime. It sounds like a band. So here you guys have been going on that for 2 years, and is this your first farm, your third farm, your 10th farm? Where do you stand in your career?
Oh, this is my first farm. I have a partner, Zach, and we started it together. We actually were just, we live next door to each other in town, in Gainesville, Florida, and I'd been staying at home with my two children gardening, and because it was something that they could do with me, and I'd been doing building work and stuff, but so we started gardening in town, and we ran out of space where we were. We planted things everywhere. We made garden beds where we could, and the grandparents of my children had offered the use of their land to grow on before to me and Liz, their daughter. And so I asked them if we could take them up on it, and we started what we felt like was a big garden out of their house. And then while we were doing that, we kind of just were too enamored of what we were doing to quit. And so we plotted how we could continue to do it and try to make our living from it. So that was kind of the hatching of it.
So this is your full-time job now, year two. You don't have any other off-farm situations, or Liz is still your partner?
I don't. Personally, my partner in it has a little bit of side work at a pizza joint here. It's really kind of almost famous place, local pizzeria. He works just like a night a week there, I think. But yeah, we've both been doing our best to sustain our families on it. It's been a little challenging at times, but you know, it's also been really amazing and rewarding, and I feel like we're just kind of getting into the viability part of it now.
So you haven't had a chance to probably, if you're in year two and you've been going that hard and up all the way to 3 acres, you've probably been putting up a lot of infrastructure and crazy busy like a maniac person.
Yeah, that's been a lot of things. I mean, irrigation and our barn and walk-in cooler and, you know, some implements and building our, what else? We have chickens, we have bees a little bit, and planning on getting pigs soon and planning on getting some cows, maybe a milk cow. So, yeah, there's not been tons of time for, like, you know, things much beyond the vegetables and getting the things ready to be able to handle them. But I feel like, yeah, now the groundwork is somewhat laid, and hopefully we can kind of branch the tree.
And what are the other branches of the tree where you live? You were mentioning this pizza parlor that's famous, and I'm hopeful that they are buying local produce. What are some of the adjoining institutions and spaces where your Gainesville local food scene is bumping? I know that there is one because I've been emailed by four separate parties in Gainesville about filming the movie. So I was like, man, those Gainesville people are sure on the pulse.
Yeah, well, it's kind of exciting here, mostly because we're kind of way behind everybody else. Or, like, not everybody else, but, you know, definitely behind the Northeast and out West and a lot of the Midwest. I feel like the food culture is, like, just arriving. And I mean, I think it's with the mainstream in a way that Michael Pollan and his work. And, you know, I felt like it was some watershed event when he was on Oprah Winfrey last year. But actually this next month, another thing that I worked on, haven't been working on just during the CSA season this year, but is we're opening a food co-op in Gainesville called Citizens Co-op. And that's kind of been in the works for about 4 and some years now, almost 5 years maybe. So that's exciting. And then a lot of the local restaurants are just beginning kind of to really have any interest and begin to buy food, and you know, I think they're keying on the fact that there's a real marketing opportunity there too, of course, but I think it's an authentic effort too. You know, people are really, I feel like, just beginning to understand why. So
So they're beginning to understand why. And what are the, so if you're in the early stages of that rebuilding food, the local food system, what are the first businesses that have been like real champions? I mean, obviously coffee is a big part of fueling the local food system, but do you have a local baker? Do you have a local brewer? Do you have a cheese situation?
Yeah, actually,
pretty hot down there for cheese, but maybe you're doing it anyway.
Yeah, no, there's folks making cheese, there's folks making yogurt and, you know, selling milk and raw milk and, of course, the pet food. our state situation here is a little lagging in that respect, too. But there's, local brewery. My friend just opened a couple years ago now. It's starting to be all over the place. There's winning awards and stuff, and there's a couple local coffee roasters, there's a couple local bakeries, I feel like as a whole, it's just beginning to gel as kind of a community around it. You know, I feel like because a lot of these entities are new, it's people are more inclined to actually communicate about it and with one another and kind of celebrate it a little bit.
And you're celebrating in some serious heat, but what is the conventional ag backstory? What has, I know Gainesville is a university town. Is there an ag department at the university, or is it not an ag-oriented school? And what are the major commodity crops that you're seeing around you in the land?
Yeah, right now there's a lot of field corn, there's tobacco, there's some squash, there's watermelons, those are the things that I think of off the bat. There's tomatoes further south, there were just strawberries happening, soon there'll be blueberries, so those things are all grown, you know, in a commercial context, and you know, that's an interesting thing because I feel like the bulk of the more diversified farms are much smaller, take up a lot, you know, are very, very small in terms of how much land we're actually accounting for altogether, you know. I think I've heard before that Alachua County, I think, imports about 95% of its food supply or something crazy like that. So, you know, it's kind of a drop in the bucket right now, but it's really growing very quickly too. So hopefully it'll be, you know, what everybody knows sooner than later.
People will be coming, you know, on the train from Portland, Oregon with their suitcase full of seeds. And they'll say, hey, we heard Gainesville was awesome.
That'll be the day. That'll be amazing. It's hard to imagine somehow, but yeah. I think, you know, there's a lot. Actually, our next door neighbor is a cattle farmer as well. That's another thing that people do. But yeah, it's, and people grow citrus around here. So
And you probably have a lot of suburbia.
Yes. Alachua County is not the densest of counties, but in terms of population, but it's, you know, most of the population is around the university in Gainesville. But it's a beautiful place. There's springs here. I feel like that's the redeeming springs and rivers. In the summertime, you have to get to the water, and we're not at the ocean, so we have all these freshwater springs and rivers that keep us alive.
And now you're in two years. You're like deeply in. There's some springs and rivers. It's 100 degrees outside. Are you gonna make it? Are you hooked? Are you still questioning? Like, do you even have time to question? You know, what's it like being where you are right now?
Yeah, well, I feel like my partner, Zach, is moving at the end of this season. He's going west, and so that'll be a whole different era for the farm, I believe. And but you know, for now, we're certainly going to go next season, and I feel like the CSA and the farming part of it are kind of the heart of something that really there's a lot more to. I mean, I consider what we're doing almost like a process of trying to develop a land-based way of living that is sustainable and that can be kind of a model for people to learn from and to come to and be a part of and participate in, and hopefully we can, you know, have some kind of some good sharing of new ways to do things that are a little more a little less demanding on our
Are you trying to find the solution to the world's problems right there in Gainesville?
No. I wouldn't do such a thing. No, it's, you know, we'll do what we can, I guess. But it, like I said, I think where we are in Florida is such a we have so much to catch up with, I feel like. You know, ideas come down here a lot later than they land other places sometimes. And so what's like been happening for years out west or up in the Northeast like is like a brand new thing here oftentimes, and so we can kind of, I feel like it makes it easier to predict the future too sometimes. You can just look elsewhere and see what's happening and be like, oh, soon we'll do this, you know. It gives a little, like, we feel like pioneers even though we're doing nothing new, you know, in a lot of ways.
Well, and there's this wonderful thing that we have that those pioneers didn't have, which is called the internet. What a blessing.
It's true. Yeah, I was just describing to somebody that was visiting the farm. We just had lunch. They're visiting from a little further south, and they came with their children, and we made lunch together and ate it. And we were talking about, or I was relating to them how the newsletter that we produced for the CSA, like, I have a phone, and I would write. Sometimes I would even write it on my phone, like typing little, you know, the little tiny keypad on my phone, and then take pictures with my phone, and then write up like a list of the vegetables, put it all in an email with a recipe or two, and send it to my friend Walton, who's like a graphic designer I grew up with, and then he would email it to my in-laws' printing company, and we would pick it up on the way into town to our market, and, you know, so then we can give everybody a newsletter cut off us the same day. So yeah, I don't think we could have done those things, you know, even 5 or 10 years ago, really.
Yeah, you know, and so many of the seasonal migrations of migrant and immigrant and sometimes illegal workers are coordinated entirely through cell phones. And, you know, if you have a BlackBerry or an iPhone, the number of apps that you can use, and we have a bunch of stuff on, like, irrigation coordination, you know, it really is a supercomputer in your pocket, and if we think of it that way.
I was curious to see what you guys had posted about that, because my friend sent me a link about it, and I never, like, fully checked it out, so.
Well, there's a couple stuff up on the blog that you should check out. And then there's one up on FarmHack about our what's it called, Garduina, or Arduino.
Okay. Yeah, Zach and I will joke with each other that we're like iPhone farmers, you know. make fun of ourselves.
also, new nerd. I noticed on Hipstamatic, that iProgram, that is really good for farm pictures. We did a whole bunch of glamour shots with the cow.
Yeah.
Pretty great.
Yeah, I need to get more funky with it, probably. I just do, like, you know, pastoral.
Pastoral
aesthetic.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, so all sounds like it's doing pretty well down there in Florida. And if anybody's listening who's from Florida and interested to tune into the farm scene, I'm sure that a great place to stop on that journey would be Swallowtail CSA and give a call to Noah, see if he can use some help and you can get tuned in and turned on to all that is to come in the local food movement there. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me to be part of it, Art. Great. And, yeah, certainly if anybody wants to come stop by, or we love having people. So.
Right on. Well, all the best to you, all the best to our listeners, and happy spring.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. All of the trade papers are just buzzing with the information that Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, has decided that he is only going to eat food that he himself has killed, as in proteins. So thus far, he's killed a goat, a pig, a chicken, and some fish. But he's going to start hunting, he says, so that he can, you know, basically be more mindful of what he is putting in his mouth and into his body. And to quote a CNN Money article, he says, "This year, my personal challenge is around being thankful for the food I have to eat. I think many people forget that a living being has to die for you to eat meat. So my goal revolves around not letting myself forget that and being thankful for what I have. This year, I've basically become a vegetarian since the only meat I'm going to eat is from animals I've killed myself. And thus far, this has been a good experience. I'm eating a lot healthier foods, and I've learned a lot more about sustainable farming and the raising of animals." This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Nicole Taylor is always the first to talk with new and exciting personalities in the food world on her show, Hot Grease. Check out a little clip.
Everything is super sweet in the Heritage Radio Network studios today. We're chatting with Fanny Gearson. Fanny is a graduate of the Culinary Institute of America and the 2011 James Beard Foundation Cookbook Award nominee. Oh my God, we fry in Bed-Stuy. We have to talk dough. Donuts. I'm going to have to say, Fanny, I don't know if you know this. I was definitely the first person in Brooklyn to start talking about it. Did you know that?
I knew that last time I saw you.
Ah.
But I didn't know that before.
So we have to talk dough. I mean, it is a bona fide phenomenon in Brooklyn.
I'm so excited to be part of it. I can't believe it. You know?
I mean, I was just telling you before the show that I think about a month ago, I went to dough on a Sunday at 2 o'clock and all the donuts
You like what
gone.
You hear? You can hear Hot Grease every Monday at 3:30 p.m. live on Heritage Radio Network.